This is Robert Cappuccio. Welcome to the Self-Help Antidote, a weekly dose of reason, perspective, and insight, where we challenge conventional thinking and explore authentic strategies and insights around personal transformation. Our commitment to you is to bring you some of the world's leading experts in the domains of fitness, wellness, coaching, and behavior change, separating fact from fallacy. Mel Tempest. Hello.
That's me.
How you doing? It's been
I'm doing amazing.
So we've been through, God, how long has it been since we've spoken? Like this, I mean.
Like this? I have to say, Bobby, it's probably been a good 18 months. A good 18 months, 20 months. I mean, you and I chit-chat every now and then on social media, but it's never the same. It's never the same as this. So this is pretty exciting for you and I to get together. And I know there'll be a couple of people will be hitting that play button, just the fact that Bobby and Mal are having the chat.
I know I would. I mean, not for me, but for the fact that you're on the podcast, I know I'd be hitting the play button. And, you know, if it wasn't for the global shitstorm, and normally that would be a bit of an embellishment, but not so much today. If it wasn't for the global shitstorm that we've gone through in the past 18 months, I would say me and you should be ashamed of ourselves by not staying in contact as much as we used to. But this is a great restarting point. So everyone who's listening to this, thank you for joining me and Mel on a very emotional reunion and being a witness. So we're just going to wrap this up right here. Anyway, no, just moving on. So, you know, we were talking before we hit the pause button about disruption. And you're a bit of a disruptor yourself, Mel. Rumor has it, I've heard. And, you know, we were talking about what would happen if COVID occurred when Blockbuster Video had the opportunity to purchase Netflix. Like, what might the future have looked like if their core model of business was completely disrupted, that they could no longer fall back on it? How might that have reshaped the world? And, you know, what do you think fitness might look like 24, 36 months from now?
Look, Bobby, first of all, too young to remember Blockbuster.
Boo.
No, seriously, I was one of those mums down there hiring videos to keep their kids busy on the weekend. But yeah, fitness industry post-COVID, well, will we ever really be post-COVID? That's probably a more important question. I think, you know, in the next 12 to 24 months, our industry is going to look like this. Club owners are going to need to have two business models. One business model is the physical business model, and the second one is the online business model. And the reason for that is quite simply this. Let's assume that there is a choice with vaccinations, okay? There's going to be a strong possibility the fitness industry is going to be told your staff and your members need to have a double vaccination to be able to come in and use the facilities. We can't ignore that. There's no point in protesting about it, because if that's what has to be done and it's mandated, then that's what we need to do. We need to pull up our big girly pants and just suck it up and say, that's what I need to do to keep the doors of my business open. If the choice is there that you don't have to have a vaccination, blah, blah, this is where your online comes into play, and it can be a very profitable business. Imagine, you know, you're behind the reception desk at my club and Joe walks in, you know, to join the club, and, you know, Bobby says to Joe, so Joe, you know, I'll give you a tour and everything before we do this, but let's fill out the form and do tell me, are you vaccinated? And that is a question that we are going to have to ask, and we're going to have to get comfortable asking. But if Joe says, no, I'm not, there you have it right there, that Joe can't join the club. That's the realization of it all. So what happens is Bobby has to have a second offering. Okay, look, that's fine that you can't join the club physically, but you can join us online. And perhaps during that process that you're with us online, you know, maybe you will get vaccinated, or what was that? You've got your second appointment coming up for your vaccination. So we have to have a go-to tool, resource, for these people that we aren't going to be able to sign up straight away. What I'm saying is that you're going to have that physical business and that online business. Now, that online business needs to be way bigger than your Facebook Live classes. I mean, that's just a very small minority of what you can do with an online business. You know, we can be, besides the classes, Bobby, you know, club owners and trainers can be offering nutrition programs. They can be offering one-on-one coaching physically, but also, you know, if they're qualified, they can be offering one-on-one mental health coaching. They can be running seminars on there where they get both their physical and their online members together. And they can be running seminars on, you know, healthy eating, exercise, looking after the kids, because there's been a lot of disruption with the kids through COVID, as you know. So how, perhaps running seminars where you're teaching the parents to put together formats for the kids to work out at home. So the online business will be a lot more than your Facebook Live. What club owners need to do is to make sure that they have a really good provider who's going to help them put that platform together. Now, obviously, once you've got the physical side and the online side happening, you need to be charging accordingly. And probably my best bit of advice to any club owner that is considering doing this is, please don't drop your prices to get in the hope that you're going to get foot traffic through the door. It's better to have higher income and less headaches than more headaches and less income. So that's how I look at our business.
Expand on that a little bit. I'm just going to take you back there because I agree with you, and I think a lot of people agree with you, and it might seem obvious, but there are a lot of organizations that when they're stressed, the default is lower your prices. And that's not always as great a strategy as it might seem at the time. Tell us a little bit about why. Unpack that.
Okay, so the reason the majority of club owners drop their prices is fear. Mm-hmm. The fear of their customers going somewhere else, the fear of them going down to the new gym down the road. So they go into this, their butt cheeks start to sweat. How am I going to pay my bills? I'm going to make my memberships a lot quicker because then therefore more people are going to join me. Well, the lifespan usually of the cheaper purchaser is not as long as those that pay a lot more. So their lifespan, if they're paying a whole dollar value, they'll hang around a lot longer. Now, the question is, why did the club owner drop their prices? Well, first of all, it's the fear of the other people in the area they might be competing with, but also probably when they put their original business model together, they didn't take into consideration that they might have to close their doors. So they didn't have any money in their treasure chest or under their bed or wherever they keep it. So what they're doing is they're trying to bring income in to pay the rent, to pay the gas, to pay the power, to make the payments on the gym equipment that they could have, you know, under higher purchase. And so this is why they think dropping their prices, foot traffic will come through the door. That may have worked 20 years ago or even 15 years ago, but now it's all about the experience and what the person is getting when they walk through the door. And our consumers are way more educated than what they were 15 to 20 years ago. They want experience. They want feel touch. They want to know that they're getting value for their dollar. And, you know, our gym members, Bobby, are no different to you and I. It's all about what's in it for me. What am I going to get when I come into your club and I pay for a membership? Because I can go anywhere and pay $8 a week and just get hi, a wave at the door and not even a tour. So there's clubs in Australia where you can go in and say, I'm thinking about joining your club because it's $8 a week. And the person on the front desk will say, yeah, go have a look around, come back and see me on the way out. That's your $8 experience. That's not what I'm about. And I believe that's not what the majority of club owners are about.
What's interesting is going way back to when I was starting in my career, when I was a trainer. I'm not going to tell you how far back because, you know, no need to get into that subject. But I was always worried about the objections early in my career. And when I first started, I was doing personal training sessions. I'm almost embarrassed to admit this now, for about $30 per hour. And every sale, every new client I had to fight for. And there were multiple objections. And what I started to observe is as my price point went higher and higher, my number of rejections, or objections went lower and lower. And at a certain point, they hardly came at all. So it turned out that people weren't sensitive to high price. They were more sensitive to the perception of low value. So I connect with what you're saying completely. And I also hear that these two models are a necessity because the future is uncertain and you don't know when you're going to have to close your doors. What are your thoughts around even in the absence of COVID? If COVID never happened, what would be, if there would be any benefits to having these two separate models anyway?
Oh, look, Bobby, that's a pretty easy one to answer. All right, so we don't have COVID. You still got to have an online business nowadays because you have a look at where the majority of our consumers are. They're online. Now, if they're not shopping for, you know, shoes and clothes and furniture and cars, and you can even buy a house now online, they're shopping health and wellness and fitness, and they can get this from apps. You know, I can download the app now, and I can get my workouts at home, and I don't even have to have anything to do with a club. But what I'm doing by having an online business is I'm protecting the damage that could possibly happen by having that offering. I don't want my members to go off and buy apps from other people. I would rather be servicing them themselves. They live in my community. Why would I want to encourage them to go buy an experience somewhere else? Online is here to stay, irrespective of what people say. It is here to stay, and we have to have that platform. But then we do have that majority that do want to come in to the club, and they want that social interaction. It's the best part of their day. So there's two groups, and there's people, you know, Bobby, they're going to use both the online and the physical aspect of it. And that's where the club owner can increase their turnover by having that package. Yes, you've got this and this, and it goes together, or you can just have this without that.
So let me take you back to something you said earlier, because you used the word experience. And I don't know, maybe this is just my personal bias. I don't want to say I come from an era. We come from an era where there was a lot of emphasis on the environment that people walked into. And there was an interpersonal dynamic. And I think it goes deeper than just saying customer service, because service is the delivery of an intangible. The rendering of an experience is where you create something that's memorable. What do you think are a couple of key ingredients we're going to have in our environment in order to distinguish ourselves and not only thrive, but survive in the next 24 to 36 months?
It comes down to all the visual things that you can see in the club. You know, it's about what's on the TVs, how many TVs are there? What sort of treadmills and cardio equipment do you have? What sort of consoles are on them? Are they the latest consoles where they can tap into their wearables? Can they watch something on the console while they're working out? Are there flashing lights happening? You know, all of that, you know, flashy stuff, the flashing lights happening in the group fitness room, the great sound systems, and also the content of the programming. Is it boring content? Is it changed every couple of weeks? Where are your instructors and trainers getting their education from? Having something different in the club that the other clubs don't have, you know, down the road. There's some great products that have come from the US, and Upshow is one of them. And I suggest that a lot of club owners go have a look at Upshow. And this is where your members can be looking at Instagram up on the TV, and you can be dropping onto Instagram and you can be seeing that up there. And it's all based on your hashtags. So it's all about the visual stuff that they see. It's a lot more than, you know, when you walk into the club, they go, "Hi, Mel, how are you?" And then Mel goes, "Yeah, hi, Bobby." And then, you know, you don't see me for 45 minutes. And then I walk in and go, "Bye, see you at the next workout." It's more than that. It's also about the experience that you give your consumers on your social media platforms. I think as an industry, we need to move away from the Instagram images, you know, take a picture of me, drop it on to Facebook. And we need to stay away from that. We need to be supplying our consumers with educational stuff that every shape and size, irrespective of male, female, irrespective of sexual orientation, that they're going to get something from it. We disarm people many times as club owners just based on the pictures that we throw out into the industry. And this is
I agree. Give us an example of that.
Oh, you know, I tried to just. So when we opened, here's an example. 18 years ago, when we opened, I banned crop tops in my gym. Okay, my staff weren't to wear crop tops when they were teaching classes. No, it wasn't because I was a big woman or I felt negative about my own body. What I realized was when I opened my club, everybody that was walking through the door was wearing tracksuit pants and baggy t-shirts. They wanted to be somewhere where they could just be them. They didn't have to put 5 layers of makeup on or throw oil all over their body so that everybody could see, you know, their muscular bodies. People don't want to always look at, you know, half naked people on social media and on Instagram. It's not about that anymore. And if we want to change the image of our industry, we need to change what we throw out there. And this goes for all club owners, all studios, the media, our associations. We need to change what people see about us. And one of the reasons that gyms have been left on the back burner, last to open, first to close, not taken seriously, is because those that are decision makers when it comes to the politics of this world, they are the people that are making the decisions, and they make those decisions based on what we throw out there into the industry. We are no longer steel plates clanging down the back. We are no longer, you know, muscular posters or tattooed people representing us. That's not who we are anymore. That is a very small minority. The majority of our industry are people just like you and me that go to work every day, mums and dads, uncles and aunties, grandmas and grandpas with kids who just want to stay fit and healthy to live a little longer and enjoy life.
Wow, that's a lot to unpack there. And here's a few things that I'm hearing just to make sure I have this right. First is the element of hospitality. And you know, there's something that used to bother me. And that's when you would go into a course or a workshop, and you know, the presenter would, and I'm not calling anybody out, would say, well, when somebody comes in, greet them by their first name, have enthusiasm, welcome them. When they leave, make sure they get a goodbye, see you next workout. And I remember sitting there going, no shit. Like, that is not a point of differentiation. It's like, if you're not doing that, your culture is absolutely broken. And I hear you saying that that is not going to get you noticed anymore. So you need, yes, you need to have that in place, but that by itself won't gain you any recognition. Behind that, everything in your environment, even the most minute detail of design, needs to matter. What does your club look like? And viscerally, I don't know why I can't speak on this episode, feel like you need to be high tech as well as high touch. You're talking about inclusivity as a sense of community. When I talk about community, I think it's distinct from a group. Like, a lot of times people say, well, you know, we have group exercise because we want to cultivate community. And very often group exercise does facilitate community, but they're not the same thing. A group of people is when you have like two or more people and they come in and they gather for a certain reason. Community evolves when those people become mutually invested in the well-being and success of one another. That's a community. That's powerful. And then on top of all of that, we need to help people be able to sort through all the noise and the bombardment that they're getting on social media and offer true expertise. And true expertise is about distinctions. So when I'm listening to this, it's almost like moving forward in the new era of fitness, everything counts.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, and how could you not want it to count? And how could you not want to offer that to your consumers? How can you be a business owner that doesn't want to do any of those things?
So is it lack of willingness, or is it lack of capacity at times? And does that even matter at the end of the day?
I think the reason people don't move forward in our industry is they don't know how to do it, Bobby. And though we're in an industry that inspires people to be the best that they can be, for many business owners, they actually don't know how to aspire to be better. and how to inspire themselves because they haven't been given those tools. So we're so busy. I had this conversation with somebody last week, and I hope everybody can follow me on this. When we go to conventions and workshops, the majority of speakers, they set their presentation up to go in and to sell, and that's what presentations are about. They're selling to the middle level and the high level business owner. They forget about the lower business owner down here. And what I mean is the mums and dads and the independents and the young people that have just opened their businesses who don't have the educational background, who don't speak as well as you do, who haven't had 20 years experience in the industry and are still learning the nuts and bolts, you know, still learning how to even talk to a person over the counter. Or perhaps there's the other end of the scale where they've been in the industry for 20 years, they've just kept on doing the same thing, and now holy moly, all of this has been thrown at them and they've never moved forward in their business and now they're stuck. And what happens is we go to a presentation and somebody gets up there and says, so you guys have got to have this in the club and this is what it's going to do for you. And oh, and you can do this and this is going to create social interaction and blah, 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 blah. But no one actually told them how to get to the very first point and put that into the club. Who was the person they rang? What are the questions they need to ask? Is their business able to do this? There's just so many different points that we don't put into presentations for the lower end of the scale. We're so busy marketing to the middle and to the top because we think that that's where the dollars and bucks are and that's where we're going to get our sales quick, that we forget about the mums and dads and the new people coming in. And let's not forget, guys, these new people coming into the industry, They're gonna take your spot, and we have to prepare them to be successful. That's on us, and we need to do that.
So you've been in business for 18 years, which is remarkable. If you were in business 18 months or, I don't know, 18 weeks, where would you, knowing what you know now, where would you go to get these tools and this education?
Well, first of all, if I'd been in business for 18 weeks or 18 months, I would hope that by that stage, I would know what my business model was and who my consumers were. I would look at ongoing trends. So let's assume social media. So when I opened my club, Bobby, Facebook came in a couple of years later. So I learned on my own, because this is the type of person I am, what is Facebook? What can it do for my business? What can I put on Facebook? I have a website. And I taught myself, how do I put the stuff from my website onto Facebook? So I learned a lot of that really basic, easy stuff that we take for granted on my own. And then what I did was I seeked out who was the best in business or whose face was appearing a lot in the media that I could learn from. So I found a few of those people and I joined a roundtable. Back in, I think it was like 2007, I joined that for a couple of years. I then started going to, Network was the first event I went to, and I had to learn at that stage more about group fitness because that's what my business was built on. And then I started to go to bigger conventions, you know, Phylex became Phylex. Then I went to my first overseas trip about 6 years ago. I did a lot of stuff behind the scenes using the internet, and there is absolutely nothing wrong with doing that. I also, Bobby, looked at other industries. So we can learn a lot from the hospitality industry. We can also learn a lot as group fitness instructors from other actors and actresses, because this is where you learn to communicate. This is where you learn to do the really small things, the eye contact. This is how you create being bigger than Vegas as an instructor. Don't look at other fitness instructors, look at actors and actresses. And they're a great bunch of people actually to employ. But yeah, look at the hospitality industry, look what they do so well. And then say, okay, they do that really well here. How can I tweak that and implement that into my business? So there's some of the things that I did, yeah, probably in the first 2 years.
I love that, Mel. I understand and I acknowledge that the fitness industry does have certain elements that make it quite unique in how it operates. But I also appreciate the fact that innovation and growth and evolution is critical in any business. And you're not going to get innovative ideas if you're hanging around people who look like you, are in the same environment as you, they have the same sources of education as you. I mean, and sometimes that facilitates the cognitive biases that expand your blind spots. What you're saying is go out and look at industries that are absolutely world-class. I had this conversation years ago with a friend and colleague of mine, Michelle Dalcourt. And I said, well, you know, we keep talking about engagement and how do we engage people? And we keep looking in the industry for engagement. He's like, what about the entertainment industry? It's like, what about the gaming industry? What about industries that have gotten people to find excuses to spend money that they don't need to spend? And when things get tight, when the economy, it moves into a place where people are feeling squeezed, they spend even more money on escapism in these mediums. These mediums have a lot to teach us. And I love that you're saying that. Absolutely. So what exactly would you say, and I'm not asking you to be a futurist here, but what would you say could be the single most positive benefit of COVID, acknowledging it's been a tough time for a lot of people. But if COVID was going to bring one positive advantage into the health and fitness industry in the future, what do you think that might be?
Oh, growth, absolutely growth. Growth as human beings, growth in our business. Passion, obviously, showing more empathy, taking a step back and really looking at who we are as individuals and professionals. I think one of the things that I've learned the most in the last 18 months or so is that time is very important to all of us, and we assume that we're going to be here forever and that we're going to have our business for 5, 10, 15 years, and that's not true. I think the majority of club owners need to probably sit down now, Bobby, and part of their growth pattern is also exploring their exit strategy. So I've had plenty of time to sit down and go, well, you know, how much more can I grow my club? I can go out and open a second and a third club, but do I really want to do that? It's probably going to change the quality of my life and time and what I do now, because I'd have to put more, you know, effort into that second and third club. So I suppose for me, I really sat down and thought, wow, okay, so what's going to happen with Mel over the next couple of years? I'm going to have to put another 2 years into my club, and then I'm going to want to grow again as a person. I'm going to want to sell my club, exit being a club owner, and then take on another position within the industry. So thinking that I'm in my 50s, so that it was all over for me, COVID allowed me to go, hey, wow, 2021, I'm turning 56. I've got plenty of time ahead. Time to think about how I can grow more as a human being and how can I show more people in my industry empathy and passion and how can I help those people. We're so busy sometimes just getting up in the morning and going through the motions that we forget to stop and have a look in the mirror and ask ourselves who we really are and what we can do for others. And I think that the most important thing out of COVID, and I hope a lot of people have done this, is to really take a step back and understand who you are as a human being.
That is a deep and philosophical question, and a question that we get caught up in quite a bit. Most of the time when you ask somebody, who are you? They tell you about a certain role in their life. Well, you know, I'm a mom or a dad, or, you know, I'm a club owner. I mean, is that really who you are? Or is that like a role that you're taking on? And I don't know. I don't know if I have the insights or the wisdom to even begin to tackle that question. But I think the first place to start is nothing. I think the best answer to that question I've ever heard is I am nothing. Not meaning that you're insignificant, but there are things that reset your life. And this is an example of major events that turn your life into a blank slate. Because prior to that, if you can imagine yourself being the artist of your life, and you are, because if not you, then who? And your canvas is covered with everybody else's designs for you, all their expectations and the things you've already done and you're already invested in. And then at some point, if you came into the studio of your life and your canvas was completely blank, well, then what could you create? And the answer is, well, what could you imagine? And then what do you put on that? That becomes the expression of who am I? For me, I would guess that you are the expression of your values and what your and your beliefs and in what ways you are committed to those things, who other people are for you and who you commit to being for them. I think a powerful question is, you know, what do I want, not just in the future from my business, but day to day? Like, how do I show up? Like, what is it like to be me? And you talk about empathy and you talk about connection. Oh, man, I was having this conversation with my wife very recently. And you know, I was living in Lower Manhattan, less than half a kilometer from the World Trade Center when it was attacked on 9/11. I became very sick. And one of the things that I thought about in my 20s was, what if I'm really sick and I'm not, you know, what if this was my last year of my life? What is really important to me? Like, what would be the stuff day to day that I am so consumed by and eaten up over that would be irrelevant? And who would be the people that I, on my deathbed, I would be desperate to talk to one last time? What would I want to do? What would be the thoughts running through my head? It's kind of a stoic exercise. And I think it's a highly valuable exercise, but for better or for worse, and the outcome has been on both of those extremes for me, I started living my life, especially with work, because I think work can be and should be an expression of what we most deeply value in terms of if I was terminally ill and I had just 1 year to live, would I be doing what I'm doing right now? Would I be on the road? Would I be traveling to this event? Would I be speaking here? Would I be with this team of people? And most of the time, the answer was yes. And if it wasn't yes, I would get out of it. And in a lot of ways, you know, that horrific experience that led me to that conclusion deeply enriched my life and made my life better. In other ways, it changed some of my personality traits and habits, and it made it a bit more challenging, to be honest. But that's still a conversation I think we all need to have. And I find it curious that one of the things you talked about was empathy. Expand on that a little bit, not in our lives and in our business.
You know, Bobby, people say, yeah, I empathize with people, blah, blah, blah. And I always say, you know, until you've faced, you know, death right in front of you, until you've had something horrific happen to you, whether it be chronic illness, you know, death or one of those things that's really taken the wind out of you, I think it's hard for people to really understand the word empathy and what it really means. How can, I'll give you just some examples, you know, how can a small person empathize with an overweight person if they've never been overweight? How can a woman empathize with a woman who's lost a baby if she's never lost a baby? You know, how can you empathize with somebody that's mother or father is going through chemotherapy if you've never sat and held someone's hand next to the bed and gone through that yourself? And so sometimes without realizing it, I think people falsify their understanding of what empathy truly is. You can have, oh, I feel, people don't like to hear this, but, you know, I feel sorry for you. I wish I could help you. But when you can't say to somebody, I empathize with you being 50 kilos overweight when you've never been 50 kilos overweight. You've never had to struggle to shower yourself. You've never had to struggle to sit on the toilet and wipe yourself. You know, you've never struggled to try and sit in a chair at the picture theater. And so I think sometimes without realizing it, we falsify ourselves with some of the words that we use in our industry. And I do believe that empathy is most definitely one of them.
You mentioned earlier the value that actors could bring to your business in terms of the dynamic and the environment that they can create. And what's interesting is, you know, I've gotten into the performing arts, not because I want to be a, I mean, we're all performers within our domain, because if we're not emotionally provocative, at some level, we're not effective. But it's not because I want to star in a film or I want to star in a play, as cool as that would be. It's because there's such an intersection of what we do day to day and what we can learn from people in the performing arts. I'm so there with you. And people think, well, acting, it's about pretending. And the hard part about acting is you're being trained to stop pretending, to step out of that role and to step into the role of a different character. And one of the elements that has been so profoundly meaningful for me is you never deny anyone's reality under any circumstances. And what I'm observing in our society is we're increasingly becoming a society that doesn't get something unless it's happened to me personally. Then I get it. But I'm kind of disconnected if it's happened to you, or I might say something empty, or even worse, I deny your reality because your reality and background and experiences are different than mine. And it's almost like, you know, I'm reading, God, I can't get out of my house because, you know, we're snowed in, and I'm here in Southern California. I'm like, snowed in? What are you talking about? I'm looking outside. It's sunny. Like, change your attitude. And it's like, it's maybe that's a bad analogy, but I think in a lot of cases it does fit. And you're talking about not only not denying someone's reality, but holding the space where you're committed to imaginatively and emotionally project yourself directly into it. And it reminds me of a conversation we had on your podcast a couple of years ago. And it was me, you, and two other lovely gentlemen, Robert Dyer and Dr. Michael Mantel. And Dr. Mantel was talking about how with the advancements in technology, we might run into a situation where so much of what we do is replaced. And I remember that conversation. And I know people were balking at that back then, but I think now, fast forward just a couple of years later, the idea of advanced AIs is not as ludicrous as it might have seemed 2-3 years ago. It's a little bit scary in some cases. But I think the one thing that's not going to be replaced anytime soon is that interpersonal dynamic. Not like you're in my thoughts. You know, I wish there was something I could do for you, but I am with you. It's that empathy element. And empathy is a way of being. And I also think it's a skill set.
Totally agree with you. And I remember that podcast. It was amazing.
Yeah, I remember we were doing a series of those. Like every few weeks, we would hop on and exchange ideas. And you know, what I loved about those forums is the four of us, we would agree on a lot of things, and that's all well and good. But another thing that's disappearing from our society, we would have animate disagreements.
Yes.
And like, I know like Michael would jump in and just, I don't buy into that at all. And then Robert would come over the top. And it's not that we're not getting on. We like adored each other. And that made the conversation more engaging because we could, we were on the same path. We were committed to the same mission, same vision, and we were exploring multiple pathways and turning over conversational and ideological rocks that would have been left unnoticed and unexamined had we not had that conflict in the dynamic. So,
do you remember one of the conversations we had about was employing overweight trainers?
Yes.
Yes, yes, yes. Mm-hmm. And this takes me back to when we were talking about empathy. You know, if you have an overweight trainer, it doesn't necessarily mean that they weren't a bigger person at some stage. And though they're still a bigger trainer, they're able to still help people that come into the club that are wanting to create, you know, a more positive path in terms of losing weight or better mental health. And I've said this many times, I have overweight trainers in my club and they inspire, you know, hundreds of people every day. But the fact that they're working out, their heart healthy, yes, they're overweight, but that's life is more than the physical. Life is more than the physical. It's about feel, touch, you know, and how you impact other people's lives.
That was one of my favorite podcasts that I've done of yours. And the reason for that is you went round the panel, the virtual panel, and asked us to all give our input. And I think I was coming at it from a perspective of branding and culture. And it was just really long-winded. And then Michael came on and he said, what are we talking about here? Like, what do? We help people.
Yeah.
We help people in these situations. Like, does it matter if someone is a member or a team member? And I was just like, yeah, you know what? Shut up, Bobby. Shut up and listen. Because it's like I went from being a panel member to a member of the audience for that segment. I was like, wow, that hit me. I was like, God, that is so poignant and so powerful and relevant. I gotta get Michael on this podcast.
You do. Actually, you should get the three of us on here. It would be interesting listening for everybody, I think. But you know how you just said that Michael said to you, what do? We help people.
Mm-hmm.
Those words, we help people. So this comes back to the very first question that you asked me on today's podcast about where are we going to be as an industry post-COVID? We help people physical, online. We help people with both. We help them physically in our club's touch field. They're there. Those that don't want to be there are online and we're helping them. And that's what we need to not forget.
I think it's so simple, yet I think people in multiple industries start to grapple with that and they get away from their originating intentions.
Yeah.
And I remember I was speaking at a regional event for a major company and you had a couple of hundred people in the room and we were going through a lot and it was necessary. And we were going through a lot of operations and I got into a conversation in the back room with a regional vice president of that region. Then this was a guy who, you know, those people you just get a lot out of. Yeah. Like they just make your day better when you see them. This is one of those individuals. And it's like, Bobby, you know, the one thing that's missing from this day is we're not drilling home a simple fact. We do two things in this organization. We help people and we help people who are helping people. And that's it. And if anything we're talking about up in front of that room doesn't directly feed into one of those two things, it's just like intellectual masturbation. I don't know if that's the exact phrase he used, but kind of like it would be an appropriate phase. What's the one thing that over the past few years, the fitness industry has gotten away from that it really needs to reconnect with?
Our collaboration with their peers. If we're gonna help people, our consumers, we as an industry need to come together stronger and collaborate together and stop fearing each other as fitness professionals. Because until we can do that, we can't sell the right message. And the message comes back to what I was saying earlier on in the podcast about the media that we throw out there, the pics that we throw out there. COVID was a fine example of our industry being fragmented, and it still is fragmented. We have pulled together in some areas in a collaborative manner, but now we've got other things that we need to pull together. We're talking about the possibility of our industry being a double vaccinated industry to enter it. So we need to pull together and help each other to be able to do that so that we can open and commit ourselves again to helping people. So I hope that answers your question.
It does. And my next question is a big one. It's kind of unfair. I just remember that back in the early 2000s, like 2001, 2002, we had massive polarization in the industry. So I was with NASF and I was part of the leadership team there as the director of professional development. And I was out in New York City working intensively on a project with one of our biggest accounts at the time. And they were and by extension, we were launching a conference, and it turned out to be a great conference. But one of the hilarious things I remember is there were people at the conference whose sole job was to walk around with walkie-talkies and escort certain presenters to make sure that they never crossed paths so there wouldn't be any physical altercations. I mean, that's absurd, but it's also kind of hilarious. And we went from that level of division, and then we kind of were coming together about 2006, 7, 8, and then we start to polarize again. What is it that constantly causes that polarization and fragmentation? What do you think is one of the root causes?
Fear. Fear that another professional may be better than you. Fear that they may have a wider audience. Fear that they may have the solution to their clients' problems. Absolutely. All of that put together. I think the sad part is that we need to understand and remind ourselves why we got into this industry in the first place. It comes back to helping people, not just helping the people that join the clubs, but actually helping each other as peers. What's wrong with Bobby ringing me up and saying, you know what, Mal, I've got to go to this conference. I'm really struggling with this. Got any ideas? And I present at conferences too. I'm not going to say to Bobby, well, I'm not telling you what it is. You go find out for yourself. I want success for Bobby, because if Bobby is successful, then the peers that attend his convention, they become successful. They take that back into their business. And then our consumers become successful in their goals that they want to reach. And if they reach their goals, that does two things. A, it makes our industry look fantastic, and state government takes us more serious. And the other thing is the reality that we are helping and changing people's lives and doing what we're supposed to be doing. Mm-hmm. So let's get off our big horse. Stop trying to be the great big white knight in shining armor who's going to solve all the problems of the fitness industry. Let's just say each of us has a gift. Let's share that gift and just move on and do what we're supposed to do. Mm-hmm.
The great philosopher, Dave Chappelle, once said at about 1 o'clock in the morning, we were in a small group at the Westside Comedy Club in Los Angeles. And he had made a statement from the stage that was pretty interesting. And he said, don't lower the ceiling, raise the floor. And when we share and leverage resources, we raise the floor for one another. I think that's critically powerful. I remember early in my career, it was my first management job, and it was like the lowest level of management I can get into. I was promoted to head trainer, and they brought a consultant in to sit down and talk with me. He just happened to be there. And he said, you will be successful to the degree that you seek out and surround yourself with people on your team that are significantly smarter than you are. And then the owner of the facility and a friend of mine quipped, that shouldn't be too difficult for you, Bobby. Oh, fuck off. But anyway, it was incredible advice. And he did have a fair point in retrospect. But Mal, I just want to say thank you for taking time out of what I know is a very busy schedule and just hopping on and having this conversation with all of us.
Oh, look, you're very welcome. And I just want to say, you know, to the guys that are listening, Bobby, just remember one thing about the fitness industry. Nothing is original. So share what you've got so that we can grow.
Beautifully said. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Visit us at theselfhelpantidote.com to share your feedback, insights, and recommendations on what topics you'd like us to explore in the future.